You are listening to a free version of Majority Report with Sam Steeter. To support the show and get another 15 minutes of daily program, go to majority.fm, please.
The Majority Report with Sam Steeter.
The destiny of America is always safer in the hands of the people than in the conference rooms of any elite.
Sam Steeter.
They are unanimous in their hate for me, and I welcome their hatred.
We must guard against the acquisition of unwarranted influence, whether sought or unsought, by the military-industrial complex.
The Majority Report with Sam Steeter.
If I get the feeling you've been cheated.
It is Monday, May 16th, 2016. My name is Michael Brooks, and this is the four-time award-winning Majority Report. We are broadcasting live steps from the industrially ravaged Gowanus Canal in the heartland of America, downtown Brooklyn, USA. USA. On today's program, Benjamin Dixon, host of the Benjamin Dixon Show, is going to join me. We're talking about the state of the race, the Democratic primary, in its very final stages, where the progressive movement goes from here. We're going to draw some historical parallels between Bill Clinton and Jerry Brown in 1992 Democratic primary and Bernie Sanders and Hillary Clinton today. Plus, we all know Hillary is a tremendously weak candidate. What can we do to intervene to help her help herself? Talk about all that and more. Plus, Moody's downgrades the credit rating of the Kingdom of Saudi Arabia. It's another hottest month ever as the global warming crisis continues spilling out of control. Verizon workers are still on strike because they really have no alternative but to be on strike. This isn't just about benefits. This is actually about the very security of their jobs. The Obama administration coming in with an intervention now in an attempt to resolve that strike. It's been going on for over a month. I walk by Verizon strikers every morning on my way into downtown Brooklyn, on my walk to work. The CIA tipped off the apartheid government and helped put Nelson Mandela in prison. Talk about that. Plus, we all know that Donald Trump has an amazing, or had really one of the best PR operatives that the game has ever seen, a man named John Miller, who did a fantastic job. We have more of John Miller's tape. He really just shows you. I mean, it's just textbook, frankly. Barack Obama warns the graduating class of Rutgers University against apathy. Tells them that ignorance is not a virtue. It's a blistering attack on Donald Trump. He's right. But I just read Listen Liberal after listening to Thomas Frank on this program, and I have a little bit of a problem with that frame. And apparently, there's a guy named Billy Corgan who used to be in a band that I never listened to, and he likes to wear silly outfits and not pay his taxes. So he was on Alex Jones wearing silly outfits and saying crazy things to justify not paying his taxes. We've also got an amazing Donald Trump ad attacking Hillary on Benghazi, and Rince Pribius tells Chris Wallace on Fox News, Archie, don't go to me about the freaking sexism and stuff and those things. I'm not the right guy to ask. I don't particularly care for the ladies myself. We have a new Two Dope Boys dropping tomorrow. And on this past Thursday's Two Dope Boys, we talked to a woman named Sara Vang Nguyen, who's a multimedia artist, writer, an activist about representations of Asians in mainstream media, about this new series she has on NBC Digital called Self Starters. And it was a really great conversation. And we've got more reviews pouring in, more people subscribing. It's a conversation about race. It's a conversation about the future. It's a conversation about the bigger trends that are taking us all into really just this next phases of America and next phases of kind of global culture and everything else. The good, the bad, and the ugly. We're talking about all of it on Two Dope Boys. So please go to Two Dope Boys Pod. That's spelled out, Two Dope Boys Pod. Click on the subscribe page and you can go onto iTunes and subscribe there. We also have an RSS feed that you can subscribe. And we'll be on Stitcher soon if we're not already on Stitcher.
We are on Stitcher.
We're on Stitcher. Two Dope Boys and a podcast. Number two, Dope Boys and a podcast. Super producer Matt Leck making that all possible. Matt, doing well, Matty Rich?
Yeah, I have an announcement to make. Radiohead are a good band.
Yeah, I think people could have read that from you based off of your song choices.
Yes, but I just wanted to put that out there because they have a new album out and it is a very good album.
Is that what you were doing this weekend? You're catching up on Radiohead?
Yep. Got some good Radiohead Enin.
Actually, I like Radiohead too. All right, everybody. We'll be right back with Benjamin Dixon. And we are going to talk about where we go from here. Become a member of the Majority Report today. Majority.fm/become a member. I'll talk about all the rest of the ways you can support the show at the top of the hour, at the end of the show. Benjamin Dixon's with us. We'll be right back.
Tried to tell Nick in 2012, Nick, working hand to hand and no avail. Volume one was too heavy for you frail, Nick, so I got lean like codeine and pills. It's the visionary in the vintage Chevy. It's been a while, but wow, you still care. Free Nash till they pass out obituaries in bold caps. Your was not there. And I could do anything but move backwards. The hardest thing is to keep from being distracted. My big sister still claiming me on the taxes. Tell Uncle Sam I just need a second to add this. Gave my mama 10 racks and she packed and went to chew mash with it. Could dribble the work and gave me half of it. Half of it I tucked in the back of the air mattress. A quarter stash was stashed in the box with the Air Maxes. The rest got lost in sacks with my wife in no BM. Whack, dropping links in my DM. Bathroom, been down in TL. I'm glad that you finally made it to the future, but you late and the price is through the roof. If you want, you could wait outside the building. I ain't taking no more meetings.
Step in the water. Water was cold. Chill my body, my soul.
I bring you greetings from the First Church of Boone Baptist, United Fellowship of Free Nationals. Residing pastor is Die Pack, and the First Lady is a with slanted eyelids and thick sunglasses. Martin Luther King fan for you. Sweating on my patent leather. Yeah. Pressure turning featherweight into a Cinderella. Yeah. I ain't seen the ground in days since I grew with fellas. You do you want better? Word to the liquor that killed.
Welcome back to the Majority Report. I am Michael Brooks. That was Anderson .Paak. Everybody should be listening to him. And joining us now is Benjamin Dixon, my good friend. He is the host of the Benjamin Dixon Show, which you can find on YouTube, you can find on iTunes, and everywhere else where you find good things, sometimes bad things, but in his case, good things. Benjamin, how you doing?
Hey, I'm doing great, Mike. Thanks so much for having me back on.
Pleasure to talk with you, as always. So let's start by sort of, you know, the Democratic primary is obviously still happening.
Right.
You know, Bernie Sanders is in fact coming off two very impressive wins in Indiana and West Virginia.
Yeah.
And actually, one of the kind of fascinating things about the exit polling in West Virginia was that he still won by a significant margin. I don't have the number in front of me right now, unfortunately, but among Democratic primary voters who said that the party was too liberal. Mm-hmm. I mean, he still clocked in with those voters, I think, really, again, proving that this is about when you actually talk to people about delivering for their real needs, there is a broad audience for it. You know, but now let's go to, there's a lot of controversy about what happened in Nevada over the weekend.
Right.
Just kind of set the stage for it. And again, I think it's very important. I know you agree with me on this. I think you and I are obviously very ardent and Bernie advocates. Mm-hmm. But we don't want to sort of sell anybody a bill of goods. And I think
right.
that, you know, the reality is that it's been an incredible campaign.
Mm-hmm.
It's still somewhat conceivable that he could pull it out. But the truth is that he's, you know, she's winning, right? Like, that's
right.
just reality.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
we're in, you know, so with that sort of caveat set, what happened in Nevada? Can you give us the kind of rundown of that?
Yeah. So, I'm going to start with one tweet that I read. Mm-hmm. Someone said that they didn't go into Nevada with basically hoping for a miracle to happen. They didn't go and get their fantasies let down by the rules. They went just expecting Nevada, the Democratic Party of Nevada, to carry things out according to their own rules. And essentially what happened was a last second rule change that happened before most of the people could get in there. And let me use a different word. I don't know if most is the right word, but before quite a few people could get in. The convention was supposed to start at 10 a.m. and they did a rule change, a temporary rule. They voted on temporary rules at 9:30, mm-hmm. which prevented a lot of people from participating in it. And so a lot of the videos that we see, the core of it is that there were rules that changed in favor of a particular outcome that was not in favor of Bernie Sanders. And a lot of the criticism against Bernie Sanders supporter this weekend has been, well, Hillary Clinton won on the election night, on the primary night there right. in Nevada. So, you know, we should just take it. You know,
I'm sure that if Hillary Clinton had lost, there is absolutely no way that she would ever try to do some type of maneuver at a convention to reverse the results. I think
right.
the likelihood of that happening would be like a comet hitting the earth.
Exactly. Yeah. Right. So, right. I mean, so what happened essentially was, you know, they have a 3-tier system, which is, in my opinion, extremely convoluted in terms of the public's perception. Right. It's difficult for people to understand that, well, we voted and Hillary Clinton won on the first tier or I call them rounds. Hillary Clinton won on the first round. Mm-hmm. That should be the end of it. But in actuality, according to their own rules, that's not the end of it. And we saw later on where Bernie Sanders actually flipped Clark County and ended up getting the second tier in his favor, right? The second mm-hmm. round went to Bernie Sanders. And so there was a fear, or the suspicion is that there was a great fear that the result in the third tier would actually have gone in favor of Bernie Sanders. Mm-hmm. And as a result, you have people, party in power, manipulate the rules such that that would not have the opportunity of happening.
Right.
Now, clearly, Hillary Clinton won on the election night. We get that. But, you know, when people see things happening right before their eyes, when they see almost a coup, when they see the Roberta Lange, the chairman of the state party chairman, essentially hijack everything to the sense where I'm in charge. It doesn't matter. No one can challenge. And she actually said this, right? No, you know, no one can challenge the chair's ruling. Mm-hmm. And she ruled in favor of the yeas, essentially a coup right in front of their eyes. And my only question is, like, two questions. One, if Hillary Clinton won according to the rules, then there should be – why would they need to make these temporary rules change? Why would they have to strong arm the results essentially? And then two, what do they expect people to do when they see this type of behavior from a party that that they've put their trust in for many years? Do they expect people to just lay down and take this and not be upset? So, you know, that's just a quick, dirty version of what yeah. happened on this weekend.
Yeah, I mean, that's kind of, I think, like the bigger question, particularly as we move into, again, I just think being, you know, intellectually honest with the audience as we sort of move into a phase where I think, you know, we're at like the certainly beyond the 90th percentile that mm-hmm. Hillary Clinton's going to be the nominee.
Right.
And, you know, and what I always say with the kind of Bernie or bust thing, which we won't really get into today, and I think you and I are actually kind of on the same page with that. If somebody could actually explain to me a strategic, you know, reason and actual argument for that position that led to something that was real, I could certainly be persuaded by it. That argument has never been presented to me. It all kind of is based on conjecture of things that might happen or might not happen, or just a sort of moralistic desire to punish Hillary Clinton, which frankly, like I just don't, that's not how I do electoral politics. This is not about kind of like moral vendettas about people for me. That's not how I make my voting decisions. But I do think it is striking that, you know, as we move into a phase where you need to consolidate the party and, you know, yeah. that this sort of just endless nonsense from the machine and from the Clinton campaign just goes on without any regard for really how many people they're upsetting. And I guess also really, you know, frankly enough, people who, you know, frankly, maybe don't have the a sort of enough kind of inbuilt cynicism, frankly, about the process where this is sort of shocking to them. I mean, you know, it's not on some level to me, it's like I can go back to, you know, I mean, a kind of funny example is, you know, several years ago at the Democratic Convention with Antonio Villaraigosa, you know, saying that, you know, the convention recognizes Jerusalem as the undivided capital of Israel. We're going to do this by a voice vote. You know, clearly the room is like, no. And he goes, yep, I heard that. That's a yes. You know, I mean, we've all seen this stuff. If you have any kind of experience and exposure to politics, you certainly would not have an idealistic perspective about the Democratic Party. But I think that you're right, that that's kind of the bigger point. Now, moving into this next iteration, and I think that we have to kind of find like a third way here between like a Bernie or bust thing or just, you know, quote unquote, falling into line. Right. And, you know, the comparison I want to draw where there's promise and opportunity, but also a lot of danger is let's do kind of a historical comparison. When Bill Clinton ran for president in 1992, people remember that he certainly made a lot of things like he executed that mentally disabled black man. You know, he talked about reforming welfare. He did the sister soldier thing. He did a lot of racial dog whistles to appeal to the right, no question. But he also ran very heavily on universal health care. He also ran talking pretty frankly about income inequality. And he also had a candidate who is a more kind of complicated person than Bernie Sanders, but Jerry Brown was running to his left on healthcare and on NAFTA and on corruption. And now we see like Hillary Clinton's 2016 campaign it's like a very 1992 Clinton campaign instead of a, you know, 2000, 2008, 96 campaign. So obviously what happened then was that Bill Clinton became president, moved to the right, and you know, and certainly through Wall Street deregulation, through, you know, massive prison expansion, we all know what the 1990s was. So I guess my question for you is, I mean, do you think though that the environment has changed now between those two elections where there is more of an actual left that could somehow engage with Hillary without kind of acquiescing and co-signing on the inevitable reversal that will happen if she's elected?
So yeah, there's a big difference, I think, between 92 and specifically where you asked the question, right? Mm-hmm. Is there really a left? And so there's always been an American left, a political left. There's always been socialists. There's always been communists representing the left. But how engaged have they been in the electoral process? We saw that dramatically decrease since the 60s, definitely around the 90s. It was all just straight liberals, right? It was all neoliberals, for that matter.
Neoliberals.
Are they here? Is there a vocal left? I would say so. And maybe it's just a product of me just being so immersed in it, not realizing years ago. Like if you had asked me 8 years ago if there was this type of momentum behind an alternative to the third way Democrats, I would probably say no. Right. But now there's definitely an alternative in terms of a voice. And the question is, though, will they remain engaged? Will they continue to challenge Hillary Clinton? And will they continue to challenge from an electoral position, right? Not just rhetorically, not just academically, but electorally, will we continue to challenge and to shift America back to the left? And of course, just shifting us back to the left will really just bring us to the center. So
it's a
question of whether or not they're going to electorally engage.
So that's the question then. How do we, because I think, you know, obviously the bigger question is, and I do think that Hillary Clinton will win this campaign. I think she will probably be, certainly if I had to put money down, she'll be the next president of the United States. But, you know, I think, you know, there's times where I get a little bit uneasy in that prediction when I look at this campaign and I look at how they do things and I think, oh my God, they might actually snatch defeat from the jaws of victory.
Yeah.
But leaving aside that fear, how do you think actually over the next couple of months, so say that it's the end of the road for Bernie, Hillary has a nomination, we go through the rest of the summer and it's, you know, in that heat of Clinton versus Trump, how do we find a third role where instead of just saying like, okay, well, we're on board, I'm with her, blah, 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 or doing this Bernie or bust thing, is there a way of critically engaging and critically supporting, almost more like a coalition effort that does not sign into, onto, you know, again, just another neoliberal candidate? There's nothing personal about that. It's just reality.
I think it's going to require us to completely shed the sports team paradigm, right? Mm. Where our team can do no wrong, and we can look at the stats for our team and see our team sucks, but still, we're gonna wear their jersey no matter what. And always when we get in,
I'm not gonna wear a Hillary jersey. That's where I draw the line.
Exactly. So yeah. So we have to 100% reject that type of thinking. And first of all, I think it's highly unlikely that any Bernie Sanders supporter would go that far in support of Hillary Clinton. Mm-hmm. That's number one. Mm-hmm. Number two, we have to help other Democrats and other people on the left to realize that sometimes your team is wrong. And this doesn't make your opponents right. And I think that's the false dichotomy we get stuck in, right? Where we say, okay, well, if we ever admit that Hillary Clinton and the Democrats are wrong, then that automatically means we're suggesting the Republicans are right. And that's so far from the truth. I think you, like people like you and I and other progressive hosts, I think we will have to do the job of just pure journalism for a little while, where we try to, we'll have the luxury, and I'm saying this kind of cynically, but we have the luxury of not having a horse in this race other than the truth. Because what if the truth does say that Donald Trump is further to the left of Hillary Clinton on war, right? What if in the debates, right? Are we supposed to then just co-sign with Hillary Clinton, even though the objective reality of what's being said and presented to us says that she's not further to the left than Donald Trump, let's say on trade. So, and that doesn't mean that we're going to support Donald Trump. It just means we're looking at it objectively.
I would appreciate your support, Benjamin. That'd be great.
Exactly right. No, we're going to just look at the things objectively. However the truth falls, let it fall. I think in terms of just commentators, I think that's the approach that we're going to have to take, or else we'll be stuck forever not wanting to support Donald Trump or not wanting to support Hillary Clinton. But if we say anything, it's going to be misconstrued that way. Well, you do have the option of some straight line objective journalism, and I think that's one approach. But in terms of the people, I think we just have to reject football politics paradigm and just be true to ourselves.
I think there's two points there that are really important. I mean, one, I agree with you completely that this sort of, and actually I remember a couple months ago, Sam and I were both guests on the show called We the People Live with Josh Zepps. Mm-hmm. And, you know, the point we were trying to make, because the frame was like, you know, we're sort of like lefty, you know, representatives of like lefty media. Mm-hmm. And that's fine. But, you know, we're not democratic media. Right. We're progressive. We're left. Right. I'm not attached in any way to being a Democrat. There's nothing about the Democratic Party that, like, you know, I don't care. The name could change tomorrow entirely. I have no brand loyalty to Democrats other than just as a functional reality that, sure, it's better to have, generally speaking, a Democrat than a Republican. And then sometimes there are Democrats that are great. But that's not, you know, that's by no means all of them, obviously. I think the second point, though, and this is where it's going to require, you know, people to kind of like walk and chew gum at the same time. I think when we cover someone like, if Donald Trump says something that's more anti-war than Hillary at a debate, that's actually going to require doing multiple things. Because I think for me, it's going to say like, yeah, but frankly, I don't really trust anything that comes out of Donald Trump's mouth as much as I, you know, he's amusing and he's hysterical and everything, but he's obviously, you know, it's not, I think, even just like a beyond dishonest person. I mean, like, I just like, just like a kind of like little gyrating orange ball of self-absorption. You know what I mean? Like,
how can you be more dishonest than dishonest? That's interesting.
That's it. Well, it's an existential question, man. He's next level dishonest. So, but I think, so how do you have a conversation when you say, look, obviously Hillary Clinton has an incredibly flawed foreign policy record. Her view of the world is as faulty at its base, frankly. And then she's running against a guy who, who's insane. And if you put any trust in him, you're a total sucker. And also, frankly, the most likely scenario is that when, after all of the sound and the fury and all the nonsense, if he became president, the whole infrastructure of the Republican Party would basically still just kind of run the country, because that's who he would return to and rely on for his Supreme Court picks, for who to bomb and everything else. And there isn't like this wild card, like he's going to secretly be beneficial to the nation. He's a clown fascist, and it's great watching him destroy the Republican Party, but he should not be president. And people need to be able to hold all of these perspectives at the same time.
At one time, and I think that's going to be the advantage of this, right? It's going to cause some cognitive dissonance. And the question is, will people – I'm afraid that people are more likely to reject temporary discomfort of cognitive dissonance, where they trying to find a resolution to that dissonance, right? I'm afraid that they would rather reject that discomfort and just accept a black and white false dichotomy, and particularly with this foreign policy question, right? Mm. So let's say Donald Trump is saying things that is that are completely left of Hillary Clinton. You know, the truth is that, you know, if they go with this black and white dichotomy, that's going to cause a lot of people who think that they are progressive to align with Hillary Clinton and support her words that are coming out of her mouth that are more hawkish. And that's going to give some credibility to a foreign policy that we should never endorse as progressives. And so what we're going to have to do is do what you said, is that hold two ideas in our head at the same time. Currently, what Donald Trump is saying is to the left of Hillary Clinton on war, but Donald Trump is also batshit crazy. So we're not going to endorse or co-sign with either one of them. We still disagree with Hillary Clinton's foreign policy, and we need a better solution, but let's look at it objectively as possible and then walk and chew gum at the same time and move to the next conversation. I'm afraid that people aren't going to do that. I'm afraid that there's going to be a lot of Hillary Clinton supporters who are going to start pounding the drums of a more hawkish position and call it progressive. And that's kind of been the trend that we've seen throughout this entire election. And to me, that's very troubling for the future of progressivism.
Well, I mean, yeah. And I think always we need to distinguish between like the behavior and conduct of people online and in social media and offline, where it is actually, thankfully, I think a little bit of a more complicated story. But obviously, I mean, in the course of this election, I mean, people supporting Hillary Clinton online have been, I mean, you know, the Trump people have been the worst in terms of racism and sexism and everything else. And the Hillary people have been the most ludicrous in terms of, like, you know, oh, well, you don't support, you know, an incredibly irresponsible escalation in Syria. You're a sexist. You know what I mean? Like, that's sort of like the level of how dumb it has gotten, you know, from a certain type of Hillary. And I also think, unfortunately, you know, that's another challenge with the campaign, is that when you – how many people in that campaign are outside of that hermetically sealed bubble and ready to engage in a broader world? But I guess the other thing, though, that I think is worth pointing out, because I want to be clear that, yes, I'm not like, you know, there was one candidate in this race who I thought, you know, overall in the big picture, of course, really wanted to move the country in the way it needs to go, and that's obviously Bernie Sanders. Yeah. Between, you know, Hillary Clinton and Donald Trump, though, I definitely will support and advocate that people vote for Hillary Clinton. And I think that it also opens up another possibility that people are really underappreciating, which is that they're just framing it as, you know, you either have a corporatist or you don't. And they're not making distinctions, as I think we've already made, between like a corporatist and potentially a neo-fascist, which is a worthwhile distinction to make. But I'd also add on top of that, that people forget that when George W. Bush was president, and I think that this is probably the time that you and I at least came to political maturation, there was no argument really between, you know, you had a period of time where almost on some level, everybody from Noam Chomsky to like the most, you know, boring kind of mediocre establishment kind of Stan New York Magazine writer type of person were writing the same thing. The Bush administration's a disaster, and they got to go. And, you know, to be fair, Noam Chomsky was always saying that while these other people were going, like, oh, I don't know, we should give Bush a chance. But there was a certain point where everybody actually realized, oh, my God, this is a disaster. And so when you elect another Republican president, you're just going to recreate that same dynamic. Whereas with Hillary Clinton, this argument that we've already started between actual progressives and the neoliberal – that can expand and deepen. And of course, I wish that the progressive had won and we had the advantage in the fight, but not yet.
Yeah, that's something I 100% agree on. Like, because I don't see I don't see the election of Hillary Clinton as a doomsday scenario.
Right.
I don't see and personally, right? This is just me personally. I don't know that I see the election of Donald Trump as the doomsday. The only person I thought was going to be doomsday was going to be Ted Cruz. I think Ted Cruz, the Boston Globe, Globe put it best. They were like, Donald Trump's presidency would be disastrous, but Ted Cruz's presidency would be apocalyptic. Mm. Ted Cruz is the guy I thought was the boogeyman, right? There's a boogeyman in any of this. Hillary Clinton, like, I'm not going to lose. I don't think I don't agree with a lot of Bernie supporters who think that the election of Hillary Clinton marks the end. It is so far from the end because it gives Hillary Clinton and her policies the opportunity to be criticized and critiqued from a progressive position every single day, right? So it doesn't end. I think we need to bring reasoned and principled critique. I think we need to drop any of the sensationalization, any of the ad hominems, all the ridiculous things that do foment in some of our writings. I think we need to drop that and just bring a very principled critique and give the language. We have to give the people the language of opposition, and it's very complex because we're more in their corner than we are ever going to be in the Republican corner, right?
That's right.
But that does not mean everything they do is correct, and that's a problem.
That means much of what they do is incorrect and built on a fundamentally false worldview. But there is still, I always use this comparison. I'm going to use it every day until this election. Several years ago in France, there were elections where you had a socialist, you had Lionel Jospin, you had a neo-fascist, Le Pen, not the daughter who runs the party now, but her father, and then you had Jacques Chirac, who was the conservative. Mm-hmm. In the runoff, it just so happened, and it shocked everybody, that the socialist came in third. He just straight up lost. And you had the conservative and the neo-fascist go into a general election. Now, who do you vote for? I mean, it's a no-brainer. You vote for the conservative.
And
that has nothing to do with co-signing or endorsing an agenda, just as you say. Could you elaborate a little bit more on this other point that you kind of raised? Because I agree. Like, obviously, I'm not a fan of Hillary Clinton. And I think that actually, from my perspective, I think that in many ways, we as a show have actually in a lot of ways kind of like gone out of our – like, we could have been a lot harder on her than we were. Mm-hmm. But there is this weird kind of, it's one thing to say, here's a not particularly inspiring politician who's very compromised in any number of ways and has a highly questionable track record. And frankly, if you tried to debate that with me, I just don't know how you'd empirically convince me otherwise. Right. But there is this other strain with Hillary Clinton that emanates from the right, but you can see it now among some people around Bernie, that really talk about her as if she is like the devil incarnate. And it's I'm sorry, it's delusional. I don't know where that level for her, because all of the things you can tell me, like, oh, well, she did this horrible thing in Haiti, and she, well, it's like, okay, so has pretty much everybody, besides Bernie Sanders. You know what I mean? Like, that's just kind of core operating procedure. And you can have a principled critique like someone like Noam Chomsky, but even he would not personalize it to her like that. He's not Bernie or bust. So I don't get it. And I think we really need to push back against that.
I mean, I get it. I just don't agree with it, right? I totally get if you believe that this neoliberal economic policy, this neoconservative foreign policy is the devil, then Hillary Clinton is the queen of that, right? She represents the quintessential establishment candidate. Disagree with the way it's the role of the American presidency that I think people have personalized to Hillary Clinton, but the truth is every single president has facilitated this economic paradigm and this foreign policy paradigm for empire building, essentially. And there's a lot of us who fundamentally disagree with how America operates as a global player. We disagree with how we treat ourselves economically, domestically. And so Hillary Clinton represents that. Right. And they think
she does. That's true.
And
that part is true. Yeah.
Now, the question is, does that make her the devil? Well, that just makes her that makes her the devil we know, right? And to a certain extent, when I personally, I'm going to be honest with you, I have an existential crisis on my hand. I don't know what I'm going to do when I go to the voting booth, because I really have some of those same fundamental disagreements, mm-hmm. but I don't personalize it to Hillary Clinton.
Right.
I personalize it to the role of the American presidency. So I don't hate Hillary Clinton. I don't have this fomenting anger that a lot of progressives on the left have towards Hillary Clinton.
And you live in Massachusetts. You can vote how you want.
I know. That's the secret, right?
Look at you. Same with me, too. In fact, I'll do a contest. The first person that calls in with the best Trump joke, I will trade my vote with you.
Exactly. Because yeah. We're golden.
Yeah, but, we're all good.
That's the thing, man. The truth of the matter is that Hillary Clinton just represents something that people are fundamentally tired of.
Yep.
But you either it's the same criticism of President Obama, right? I don't have this anger to. As a matter of fact, I have a lot of respect and admiration for Obama. However, I am still fully aware that he's the facilitator of the same paradigm that sure. makes me sick.
Right, and I mean, and that's actually in some ways, again, probably. And Sam makes this point a lot. The different dynamic with Hillary is that you actually have a president who will not, like, you can be highly critical of President Obama on any number of policy grounds, mm-hmm. and it is very hard to not, you know, and some of this is actually not just kind of superficial stuff. There's a leadership role in the presidency that's real and kind of a distinct role, and you really couldn't ask for somebody to do a better job than he has on that aspect of it. Mm-hmm. But I do think it's going to be quite different when you have a president who, you know, there's no part of you that's going to kind of soften his stance because you like the president.
Right,
I mean,
right.
you know, like we're moving, you know, if people like Bill Clinton and Barack Obama could sell you a bill of goods to some degree, frankly, but do it in an incredibly charming way. You know, Hillary Clinton will be the used car salesman when you're just like, wow, I didn't all of a sudden believe that I was getting a souped up BMW. The whole time I knew that she was selling me
yeah.
a broken down Ford Fiat. And I actually just wanted to save the papers, sign the papers so I could stop being sold to. So there might be some advantage to that, to not have the sort of charisma behind the bad policies.
Yeah.
You know, moving more broadly, though, you've also done great work on your show highlighting candidates from across the country, Nevada, New
yeah.
Jersey. You know, these are young candidates. Many of them are women. Many of them are people of color. But many of them are, frankly, almost all of them are just young. I mean, anywhere from, you know, for politics, from their 20s to their 40s, people who are running kind of insurgent outside campaigns. What have been some of your biggest takeaways from chronicling these local races and the sort of inspiration you're getting from that for the bigger picture fight for moving America in the right direction?
The biggest takeaway, man, is that 2016 is fundamentally different than 2008. There is a momentum from this these millennials that I think is going to definitely put some people in office, perhaps this time around, but definitely by 2018, 2020, you know, you're going to have some young millennials in power. And mm-hmm. I think that's a great thing. I love their fearlessness. And I love their ability to be innovative. I absolutely admire that. Particularly, I'm thinking just right off the top of my head is Alex Law's campaign because, yep. you know, for a young
person.
He's
in New Jersey, right?
Yep. Right, he's in Jersey, right. For young people who want to run for office, it's daunting to think that you have to raise almost $1 million. But mm-hmm. then you think of the alternative, like, well, what alternative? There really were no serious models that were make you a contender. And he's really fleshing out a campaign model that is doing that. And it's going to make people competitive, even at the $100,000 mark, which is absurd. It's almost like, when's the last time you heard of someone giving an incumbent candidate the run for their money with like 10% of what that candidate is running? So yeah. it's just they're innovative. They have momentum. They have they're starting to be a rallying point themselves, right, for progressives to rally around. So I'm just a fan of them, and I'm really, you know, do what I can to keep pushing as many as I can over the next few years.
Yeah, and as a final question, I mean, it seems to me that, and I don't know if you co-sign with this, but I do think that in the larger trend line of where we're going, and I've said this on your show many times, that I think that the conflict is going to get clearer and clearer because, you know, if you go back and you read Listen Liberal by Thomas Frank, one of the subtexts of like the 1990s, and even going through many of the Obama years, is that a lot of these myths, like, you know, education can solve inequality, or, mm-hmm. you know, the sort of cliches about innovation, a lot of people accepted them, and there was more buy-in. And ironically, when you go into millennials, you're actually going to a generation that is actually more of all of these things that have been worshipped. They're more entrepreneurial. They're more innovative. They're more educated. And those things bring many benefits, like a new campaign strategy for raising money, new way of activating constituencies, new ways of doing media. On the other hand, what it's also shown is that for all of the myth-making about what these things bring, they bring many good things, but what they do not solve is they do not solve inequality, they do not solve systemic injustice, they do not solve lack of access, and they do not recreate the social compact, which has been destroyed over the last several decades by Republican and Democratic leaders. And so I think that the conflict is going to get a lot clearer, even more so than it is today, between simply like the money and the incumbency in corporate and political sectors that do not want change, and a rising demographic that demands it. And I don't know what how that turns out, but I do think the conflict gets a lot clearer.
Yeah, no, I think you hit the nail on the head, particularly with the fact that they're innovative, they're educated, but that still hasn't addressed the inequality that many of them face and suffer. Take away the fact that they're saddled with hundreds of thousands of dollars in student loan debt to get damn education. You know, there's so many things. So we've done everything they told us to do, right? We got the education. We worked 40, 50 damn hours a week, and still we're out here not able to get access to the system, because the system, quite frankly, doesn't want us to have access to it. So it's, you know, when you said new ways of doing media, it really tied it all in. Like, you know what I mean? The things I'm doing with media, the things that you guys are doing, but, you know, particularly me, because I'm coming from like nowhere. I'm coming from zero to I'm talking with Michael Brooks on the Majority Report. You know, I've been damn innovative, but that doesn't, you know, and I'm educated and all these other things, but that does not change the lack of access, the lack of funding, the lack of things that are just systemic to our current system. And unless we start addressing those things, it doesn't matter whether you're doing politics or media, or you're just trying to do a startup. You know, you have plenty of guys who are young doing startups. They're doing everything the right way. They simply don't have access to capital like they should. They don't have access to the powers that be. And so we're on the outskirts, but man, they create a generation where we're out here like we're kicking ass and taking names, man. So we're going to keep pushing.
And we're going to stop reifying and worshiping. Like, you know, this is the other great thing about this generation is, like, you know, I the last time somebody actually said anything that about like a Thomas Friedman column without saying it as a joke was years ago. Thank God.
Yeah.
And that's a positive indication of something.
Yeah.
So Benjamin Dixon, my friend, the host of the Benjamin Dixon Show, it's a really great show. Everybody should be checking it out. I know we'll be talking again soon, and hopefully see you soon, buddy.
Yeah, man.
All right.
Hey, man. Take it easy. Thanks
Thank you so much. Pleasure as always. Okay, everybody. We are going to go to the fun half, where I will take your calls. I will take your IMs. I will go over a bunch of sounds and a bunch of stories. We got a lot of really funny sound. Do we have that new part of the Obama sound from Rutgers? We have President Obama calling out Donald Trump at Rutgers. We have Ben Carson doing a little teaser on who might be vice president. Also, the CIA acknowledging that they tipped off the apartheid government as to the whereabouts of Nelson Mandela. I love how, like, the CIA, everybody already knows so many horrible things that they're responsible for, but they still, like, give a little taste every couple of years. Like, oh, no, you guys didn't even know. We were actually involved in jailing one of the greatest leaders of the 20th century. Yeah, no, it's just because we supported an all-white apartheid regime. Yeah. In case you weren't clear about that,
it's the gift from Harry Truman that keeps on giving.
It's a gift from Harry Truman that keeps on giving. Nicolas Maduro, the president of Venezuela, has ordered shuttered factories seized and given to workers. That's an interesting story. Touch on that. Moody's is downgrading Saudi Arabia. Verizon is on strike. And so much more. So 646-257-3920. 646-257-3920. That's how you can join us in the fun half. The IMs are open. Already have some of them coming through, but I will obviously take more. And go to Majority Report Kickback right now. You can use our Amazon link. Gives us a little taste, a little kickback from Jeff Bezos. If you want an ethical alternative to Amazon, go to Jet, our Jet link. Jet does the same thing that Amazon does, except it treats its workers humanely. JustCoffee.coop, fair trade coffee, tea, and chocolate. Get the Majority Report blend. It's, I mean, look, frankly, it's the best. I mean, look, it's true. Become a member of the Majority Report today at majority.fm/become a member. Subscribe to Dope Boys. See you in 2012.